What's up? It's Kareem Kweli from San Pablo, Burgos in Spain, and you're tuned in to the BBL Show.
This is Gareth Murray, player coach from the Glasgow Rocks. You're now tuned in to the BBL Show.
This is Andy Thompson. You're now tuned in to the BBL Show.
This is Anthony Rowe, and you're now tuned in to the BBL
this
Show.
This is Mike Tuck from the Sheffield Sharks. You're now tuned in to the BBL Show.
Yo, 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 what's going on? It's Kofi Josephs, and you're listening to the BBL Show.
This is Ashley Hamilton, a.k.a. AGP of the Plymouth Raiders, and you are now tuned in to the BBL Show.
And now your hosts, Jay Marriott and Drew Lasker.
Welcome to the show. We are ready to dive into episode 18. I am Jay Marriott. He is Drew Lasker. Let's talk a little hoops. This week, we check in on a former league star, CJ Geddes. Where is he these days? Find out in just a little bit. We have the scores and scorers of the week, player of the week. We deep dive on a great fan question. We preview the BBL Cup semi-finals, including a little bit of shock just released not but 30 minutes ago. The BBL trophy draw. BBL Coach and Player of the Month Awards, the Lasker Look Back. But before all this, you know it, it's Marriott Minute. Okay, intrigued me. Former guest Gino Crando is launching some instructional clips called The Breakdown. He is here to help us simple folk who simply can't understand his crazy handles. So look out for this very cool idea. He's very passionate about that. Congratulations to London Lions. Current player Byron Mullins on the birth of his son Hawk Zion. As fathers ourselves, we know just what an incredible experience that is, so enjoy it, my friend. He also announced his involvement in a Rep Basketball Academy. Is this the end of his association with the Lions? Guys, let's not be too quick to judge, because last time we did this, we were all very, very wrong. So look out for Mullins being announced on a five-year deal with the Lions soon. But staying on the subject of the Lions, they released their new threads for the rest of the season. Very clean, pretty basic, but I do love the white jerseys with the LDN on the front. I wouldn't mind one of those. Fire emoji. Okay, engage me. Joe Ikwim came out with a rather controversial Twitter letter. I quote, "Dear Sky Sports, is it too late to cancel the Wolves versus Rocks game and get the real main event on Friday night, the London Lions versus Eagles? Thanks for your consideration and time. Yours in sport, Joe." But it turns out that we'll find out later that indeed, Joe's perceived main event was indeed a blowout, and actually the chosen main events were the better games. Play nicely, Joe. Let the others get some limelight too. Speaking of the Wolves, it was announced before Friday night's game that it was Matthew Bynum-Manning's last game of his short-term contract. Now, is this big news for an open market, or is it fake news as Wolves already have it sewn up? Time will tell. Plymouth Raiders seem to have their scorer in town, announcing just before their game this week the signing of former Newcastle Eagle, Drew will know him well, Mike Morcell. They are certainly making moves in Devon. Okay, amused me. Have you seen the Leicester Riders playing around with the BBL Minis idea? If not, go and check it out. It's a great idea. Hilarious. Well done, Riders. I can see this catching through the league, and I expect to see a mini Drew Lasker in good time. The BBL player has been taking some heat, and in typical British fashion, what do? We make some pretty good banter flying around on the subject. Our very first guest, Lions head coach Vince McCauley, came with a very quick response to Raiders' quarter score graphics a little while after the feed went down, saying, "How do you know?" Which I thought was pretty quick. Josh Betts followed that up with saying that the Cloud Mitch has become the defensive player of the year. Very funny, Josh. The Hooper's voice posting a picture of arguably the most failed NBA number one draft pick in history, Anthony Bennett, saying if the BBL player was a draft pick. Ooh, tough. That one hits hard. Some expected technological pains. Time for a rethink. We will let you decide. And finally, what is the minute without a little Kieran Achara handing us another nickname to add to the show during Sky Sports, telling us that poor Johnny Bunyan was referred to when growing up as Johnny Manhands. Brilliant. So we'll look out for that, dropping that in later shows. That rounds out a very crowded Marriott minute.
And as usual, Jay, that's better than a New York minute. But as we switch gears, we move on to the BBL Coach and Player of the Month. And as I look in the sky, is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's an eagle. Actually, it's two eagles as Cortez Edwards and Ian McLeod scoop up the Player and Coach of the Month award, respectively. Cortez Edwards doesn't appear near the top of many statistical categories overall. However, he's sixth in assists, seven in steals, and he's the top rebounding guard, averaging 13 points, seven rebounds, six assists, and two steals per outing in December while playing the second most minutes of any player in the British Basketball League. Well-deserved, Cortez. Mac, or as you guys know him as, Ian McLeod, picks up his first Coach of the Month award as an Eagles coach as the Newcastle Eagles went undefeated in December. And his up-tempo ball-sharing style of play leads the league in fast break points, assists per game, and steals, as well as being the second in overall points scored. So congratulations, Mac. And I won't boast on here, but I'm very proud to see two Eagles make it. So shout out to both of those guys.
Yeah, great news for both of them. Great news if you are an Eagles fan or player, Mr. Lasker. Time to catch up on this week's results. Okay, so it's only a few games. Plymouth Raiders go down at home to the Leicester Riders, 71-77. But top scorer was newcomer Morsell with 26 points. Cheshire went down to the Manchester Giants live on Sky Sports, 74-84. Although, again, top scorer for the losers was Jim Bolull with 23 points. Let's head down to Cheshire Oaks, where we have JB Thomas sits down with BBL Show Player of the Week, Karan Ross, to talk about the award and how the team is beginning to come together.
Player of the Week, congratulations. You must be pleased to get the recognition for a really strong performance.
Yeah, I am. It's always good to, you know, get a win alongside that performance. So I mean that's really all that matters, is as long as the team's winning, I'm not too, you know, too worried about the things that comes with that. But as long as we're winning, you know, that's what I'm worried about.
And it's been a challenging season, I think, for the team because of COVID and you know, a lot of change and, you know, players getting here late and stuff like that. Do you feel like you're settling into your groove now as a group?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're finally getting to, you know, where we want to be. Like you said, it was a long preseason for us. I think it was a little longer than other teams because, you know, we had to quarantine. Then we had to, you know, switch a few players out. And I think now we're finally at full strength and it's starting to show.
And obviously it was a second win in the league campaign on the weekend. But there have been a couple of games where you felt like you could have won as well. You know, there's been games here against London, against Bristol, against Newcastle. Mm-hmm. They've all been quite close, really. Yeah. So that's encouraging as well.
It's very encouraging. You know, I think we let at least three games slip. You know, three of those games, it was like a one or two possession game at the end. And, you know, when it's that close, it comes down to just making winning plays. And I think we did that last game. And also rebounding, I think we did really well and communicating on defense and those things like that. That's what makes the difference in those close games.
And you've got a strong backcourt in particular. There's a great partnership developing between you and Mike McCall Jr. And obviously Jimbo's a star in the center, and you've got some great pieces around that as well. So it's a really nicely balanced team.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, it's a nice balance. I think we have a lot of firepower, a lot of guys who can create their own shot. Me and Mike, like you said, we can create our own shot, but we can also create for others. And I think, you know, that's hard to guard when you have two guards like that who's willing passers. And then you have Big Jimbo. You know, he's going to do his job every night. You know, he's going to get you a double-double. You know, he's going to play 30 plus minutes and, you know, play 100%, you know, the whole game. And you have Jalen who you know, he can do everything. So I think we're very balanced, and I'm excited.
You know, you've been here a few months now. The standard of the opposition, are there any matchups in particular that you've enjoyed? Or
I just enjoy playing, man. Whenever I get on the court, I just embrace it. Like, you know, it's my last time playing. You know, I don't take anything for granted. You know, I go out there and give it my all every game. And like I said, I'm just excited to be playing, because I know a lot of leagues around the world, you know, they're canceled or postponed. And so I'm just grateful that we're still playing.
And just finally, obviously, it's a win on the weekend. You've got two big games coming up this weekend and an exciting season to come, hopefully. Mm. What are your expectations for the months ahead?
So we have a really, really busy schedule this month in January. I think we play like 7 or 8 games or something like that. So we just have to keep, you know, coming in and practice, getting better every day, and not looking ahead to matchups and stuff like that. Just taking one game, one day at a time, and focusing on that next game. And I think everything else will take care of itself.
Okay, Worcester Wolves, as the Sky Sports main event, took down the Glasgow Rocks 83-77. Top scorer was none other than MBA, Matthew Bryan and Manning, with 21 points.
Growing up with style.
Oh, absolutely. He knew he was on TV. He brought it. Was that a player that's looking for a job, or is that a player that's very secure in his job? We will soon find out. London Lions, they got it done at home. Close your ears, Drew, with the mauling of the Newcastle Eagles. Top scorer, Dirk Floyd Williams, with 24 points. London Lions then took down the Glasgow Rocks on Saturday afternoon, 91-74, with top scorer going to the losing team, Issa Brandon. Drew, just quickly, we have been hard on these Lions. They seem to be embracing the Detroit Pistons bad boy image. What have you made of them these past few weeks? They look like they're hitting their stride.
I must say, and admit here on the BBL show, and Coach Vince, I hope you're listening, because he mentioned some of my comments during the game on Friday night. So tune in, Coach Vince. I must say, the London Lions are looking like the real deal. And obviously, you mentioned they put a shellacking on my Newcastle Eagles there at home. And the way that they played in that game, if they play like that for the rest of the season, they shouldn't lose a game. And for me, being in this league, being a competitor, it's very difficult for me to say, but, you know, I don't think it's any surprise to any of our listeners out there. We talked about this at the beginning of the season. They're littered with talent, and if they can maximize those pieces, then no one in the league should touch them. And, you know, I think they showed their potential that night. They were inspired. They were motivated. Now the question is can they be motivated when they go to a Manchester or go down to a Plymouth? You know, if that's the question, and if they can be, forget about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still concerned about Europe. Yes, I know, you know, Daniel has set the table for us and told us what that European bubble is going to look like, but it still is going to change them slightly. They're going to have to change their style. They're going to have to adapt, and they are going to have to come back to some games that may not be the most inspiring for them, having played maybe a great European team and having to come back to play maybe a lesser BBL team. So I think it is going to be tough for them. But hey, the big name for me that keeps cropping up, and I love watching him, I think he can do a little bit of everything, is Orlando Parker. Everybody is, quite rightly, they talk about Liggins. Quite rightly, they're talking about Williams, Robinson, Ware. They love to talk about those guys. But quietly, Orlando Parker is, you know, arguably putting up just as good a numbers, playing just as well, and also the other day hit one of those big-time shots off of Liggins doing a early LeBron James. You know, people, if we were a little bit more stricter on here in terms of commentary, we may be talking about the fact that Liggins decided to pass that. I think it's smart. I think he's a very high IQ basketball player. Some other people would expect him as a star to take that shot.
And I didn't even mention, and this might be a surprise to you, Jay, because I didn't even tell you off air, that there was a big 7-footer sat there behind the bench on Friday night. So the rich gets richer, and, you know, I'm not trying to put any rumors out there, but if the London Lions have another signing, which I think he comes from a huge Division I school, if I'm not mistaken. So this remains to be seen. You heard it here first on the BBL show.
I like it. I like it. Okay. Wow, that's exciting. I'm really excited about that. And that might put the nail in the coffin for the whole Mullins conversation. I really wish that would be, put to bed. But anyway, we move on. BBL Cup semi-final action. Big news. Just in, COVID.
Tough, man.
I hate talking about this thing. COVID strikes again. Manchester Giants have had to pull out. London Lions are through to the final. Okay, I wanted this to be a discussion about the two games. We'll get to Newcastle and Leicester in a second, but what are your kind of raw feelings to this news, Drew?
The first thing that comes to mind is it totally kills your hot take, which you mentioned on episode 16, that the Manchester Giants were going to take down the London Lions. So it totally kills that. Unfortunately, but you know, this really sucks for Manchester, because even if they are to lose that game, they lose the experience of playing in a big game that can help them down the road. Jamie Edwards talked about building in those pieces that can stay there, those building blocks for years to come. And that's the experience that you need. I mean, you can't teach that. And so it's very unfortunate for those guys. You know, I almost got to a point to where I won't want to say that I forgot about COVID, but the season was moving along so smoothly that you kind of forgot. And it just came and it said, boom, it started with those guys at Surrey a couple of weeks ago over the Christmas break. It took out, I can't even think who the other team it took out. And now it takes out the Manchester Giants, arguably before the biggest game they've played in since, I don't know, the early days before I existed in the BBL. So, I mean, this is tough, man.
Yeah, we thought it was harsh on Bristol Flyers early on. You know, they lost two games without even getting to play, and they had to really battle back to force their way out of the group. But, yeah, this is really, really tough. And I love that point, Drew, actually. I didn't even think about that. To get battle-tested is what it's all about. That's how you build culture, is you need to get battle-tested. Maybe I'm a little bit safe, you know, because I would have stuck by that pick for the Giants to go past the Lions, but I wasn't impressed with them this past weekend against Cheshire. They do frustrate me. They're a little on and off. And for me, the ball needs to go through Hectum and Brady. And at times, the guards try to do a little bit too much, especially Whelan and Wandier. Like, they've got to be patient sometimes. You know, I love how aggressive Whelan is, but there's some big moments where they let Cheshire have some daylight, and arguably Coach Thomas would probably sit back and say maybe they could have had a chance to win that game if they were a little bit more efficient given those chances. But, it's something we have to deal with. I just don't think that any of us expected it to strike at that particular time. So whilst it's been around, it's not affected a ton of things. You know, there's been a few less games. But in terms of, you know, us and the show, we've had plenty to talk about. But this one's really, really going to hurt. And I get it. I've run it through in my head a little bit. And you've got Lions with Europe. And, you know, where do you fit all this in if you pushed it back? But as a fan, you just don't want to see that going through to a final.
Right. But from a player's perspective, and shout out to Dan Rutledge, who asked me this over Twitter, do you take the win or do you ask to push it back? In a hypothetical situation that we make it to the finals, or Leicester makes it to the finals against London, and, you know, a couple guys pick up COVID leading up to the finals. And I mentioned over Twitter that the competitor in me obviously wants to play the game, because nothing replaces the emotions, those memories of playing in such a big game like that. And, you know, I couldn't even take a win like that seriously if we were granted the game 20-0. However, you have to take the win because you don't know what lies ahead in the future. You know, injuries, fatigue, team form. So it's too many factors to just say, no, let's move it back. And the schedule is only going to get more condensed because I assume more teams will be out in the near future. We got the trophy competition coming up. So, you know, don't be surprised if there's a cup final winner by default.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed that really doesn't happen, but we've still got one big game to look forward to. You will be involved in this game, Newcastle Eagles versus the Leicester Riders. I don't think there's any guesses where you think this one's going to go, but where do you think that this game is going to be won and lost?
Well, if you look back at both of these teams during the group of death, we faced each other twice, both winning on each other's home court. Ironically, both winning by 6 points. So nothing really lost. It's even. And both of these teams have a contrast of style. The Newcastle Eagles, we're trying to get up to 100 possessions. We're trying to run guys off the floor. And the Leicester Riders, they're trying to get into a slugfest, really trying to establish Nelson Henry down low, especially early in the game. The first 5 minutes, they're just dumping the ball down. Then later on in the game, they're going to a lot of ball screen action with Gino Crandell. So in reality, I mean, this result can go any way, but I would like to think that, because I'm going to assume that this game is going to come down to the wire. And this game is at Leicester, by the way. There was a draw and out of the hat. I don't know how they did it. It wasn't on Facebook, but I'm assuming where Leicester got home court. And so I'm assuming that this game is going to come down to the wire. And I'm hoping that the Leicester Riders will have a little bit of the jits down the stretch, because that raw game from London where they lost that game in the final minute. Because you know, Jay, like games like this, they affect you psychologically and they stay with you. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think it's going to come down to the wire. There's no doubts. And then it's just, you know, how those external factors are going to affect. But I don't see, you know, home court doesn't play as big a factor as it usually does. But they'll have that comfort factor of, you know, that's undoubtedly where they're practicing. That's their rims. That's how they play. So there will be a small advantage going into that. I think in terms of the jitters, I think that they answered that in that game against the Raiders, because it was ugly. It was an ugly win. And in fact, arguably towards the end, they maybe did have the jitters a little bit. They did give Raiders a little bit of daylight in that fourth. But because you get the win, perhaps that puts that to bed. But I think it's interesting. I think that, you know, the Riders are still playing good basketball, but I think they've slowed down a little bit from the hot form early on. And then obviously you guys took that, you know, unexpected hit down at the Lions. But you know what? I don't think that's going to affect anything either, because you've got a lot of what I call pros in those teams. You know, you've got yourself, you've got Defoe, you've got Fletch. Cortez has been there before as well. You know, I think that for you guys, it's just going to be business as usual, ready to play. And it's a semi-final. You know, and it's going to come down to it. It's going to come down to which stars raise their game at the right time, and which coach maybe makes the right tweak here and there on a particular run that's going to win this game. I give the Riders a slight edge in this regard when it comes to from the coaching side of things, because Rob's been there in every single situation he possibly can be. Coach McLeod has too, but most of that has been in the background. Although he took a trophy last year. So I think it's just going to be a really, really exciting game. And taking out the other semi-final from the equation, I'm just looking forward to, as a neutral, being able to sit there and just enjoy two of the best teams in the league.
Intriguing indeed.
Okay, let's change speeds here. We need a little Lasker look back.
In this episode of the Lasker Look Back, I touch on C.J. Geddes and the loss of the big man. C.J. Geddes began his college career in N.C. Wilmington in 2012-13 season, where he only averaged 2 points per game. He finished his college career at Rutgers University and transitioned right into the pros as he suited up for the Cheshire Phoenix in 2017-18. Where he helped lead first-year coach Ben Thomas to a cup championship, beating three-time consecutive winner Newcastle Eagles after being down by 13 points with 4 minutes to go and 1 point with 4 seconds left in Eagles ball. That play still stings me to this day. then moving on and beating the London Lions after being down by 13 in the first leg, and then moving on to the final, defeating the favorites, Worcester Wolves, and arguably the most impressive journey to a cup final in cup final history. In 2019-2020, he came home to the Newcastle Eagles and finished the season as the leading points and rebounder with 24 points, 13 rebounds a game, although a small sample size as the season was cut short due to COVID-19, he suited up one last time in the trophy final where he scored 21 points and 17 rebounds to capture the trophy MVP and also the Eagles 7th trophy and 25th overall. That landed him to a contract in Japanese third division, begging the question, how valuable is the big man in today's game? I'll let you be the judge. And that concludes the Lasker Look Back.
No better introduction to the big man than that. Let's get CJ Geddes in the room. Welcome to the show, CJ. How are you, my friend?
CJ Geddes.
I'm good. Thanks for having me, guys.
We appreciate you giving us some of your time. We've had to kind of work it around, so it's a nice early morning. Everybody's got their morning coffees on the go. Mm-hmm. Look, we thought it would be good to introduce people to a former star of the league, a name fans will recognize, a name fans will miss, and answer some questions myself and Drew hear all the time. So people are like, are they still playing? Where are they playing? And more importantly, how does that league compare to the BBL? So I think it's safe to give it away that you're still playing. For all listeners, where are you calling us from?
I'm actually right now in Inazawa, Japan, which is right outside of Nagoya, the second biggest city in Japan, obviously next to Tokyo. Japan B League, third division. Yeah, so that's pretty much it.
Nice. Yeah, how are you enjoying it so far? Are you settling in?
Yeah, I'm settling in pretty well. You know, the culture's, you know, different, but I'm embracing it. The language barrier is obviously, you know, something that, you know, I deal with every day, but I'm actually learning Japanese slowly, you know, maybe one word of the day, just common, you know, words, phrases, stuff like that. The food is pretty different. You know, the usual stuff that you would think of when you think of Japan, sushi, fish, ramen, all that good stuff. But, you know, there's the typical American chain restaurants around here, you know, McDonald's, Subway, stuff like that. Try not to eat too much of it, but I'm adjusting pretty well.
Oh, good. Have you got a little Japanese for us? You got anything? Even just a word?
Obviously, konnichiwa. You know, I can say utsukarisama deshita, which means thank you for your hard work.
Wow. Okay.
That's a typical saying when you're leaving somebody. So that's kind of like their way of saying, you know, goodbye. I've learned that sayonara is necessarily not something to say every time you leave somebody out here, because it more or less means that you don't plan on seeing that person for a long time.
Interesting. Wow. Hey, we educate you here on the BBL show. I thought I was going to catch CJ out there, but he was ready. Yeah. Okay, so most importantly, how does it compare to the BBL? So, you know, let's get into the detail. You know, I'm talking style of play, coaching, obviously the language barrier, import players, fans, refs. You know, I don't think fans is an issue right now. So maybe just speak to a style of play, coaching. What's that been like?
So far, we actually haven't started playing. Next weekend, we start our games January 16th. But I can relate in terms of practice and stuff like that. So it's a very fast-paced game, especially on my team. All of our Japanese guys are very small, quick. You know, they're not tall, built, you know, massive, anything like that. And typically this league, all the import players are bigs. So mainly like fours, fives with some few threes. However, there is a guard in the league, and we actually play them next weekend. Mike Ojo, who formerly played at Plymouth.
Okay, yeah.
Is in the league. He plays for Shizuoka. But yeah, it's a very fast-paced game. All the imports are bigs. You can only have two imports on the court at one time. You're only allowed to have three imports registered per team. However, we technically have four because one of our guys right now is in the process of obtaining his residency. So he could be a Japanese national player. So that could work out in our favor. But Yeah, I mean, practices are cool. You know, we do a lot of scrimmaging, a lot of drills. I'm lucky that our coach actually speaks a bit of English. Apparently, that's not very common out here, aside from a couple of teams that have European coaches or stuff like that. But, you know, it's real cool, man. The guys are nice, very friendly people in general, just, you know, the country as a whole, the culture as a whole. They don't like conflict. So, you know, anytime somebody, you know, gets mad in practice, probably me, they, you know, kind of get a little like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm like, you know, so you got to chill out a little bit. But it's cool, man. I really like it out here.
I love it. And just kind of from a language perspective, like, one of the things I found, like, playing in Europe, so I played in France, played in Spain, different places like that. One of the things I find it the hardest to adjust to is actually you forget how much you talk on the court. So for me as a guard, it's so important that people like yourself can communicate to me just simple things like left and right and different things like that. And I think everybody knows in basketball that the first kind of words you usually pick up is like swear words, you know. So I was a little bit far away in the early games and got nailed with some big screens. Have you found that kind of difficult, or has it worked out and everybody's kind of on the same page?
To be honest with you, the Japanese guys, you know, especially this team, they've been together for a long time. So, you know, year in and year out, they have American imports and, you know, they know what left, right, that good stuff is. And a majority of them speak at least a little bit of English. You know, they might not understand everything you say, but, you know, right, left, screen, right, left, stuff like that, they pretty much understand. So I haven't had any real problems in that aspect. They do know the cuss words, you know, the American cuss words. And we've been warned that, you know, saying, you know, some of these words, the referees will just automatically hear it and think negatively, even if you kind of just like mad at yourself, not really saying it towards anybody. It'll be automatic technical. So you just got to keep it cool and, you know, refrain from using them if you can.
Is the coach coaching in Japanese and then there's a guy there translating English to you in particular?
No. So that's actually one of the nice things about this team is that our coach speaks enough English that we don't have a translator that like comes to every practice and like kind of follows us around. Our coach is able to communicate thoroughly enough in English that it makes it easy. This is a company team. So the team is actually like based of a bunch of employees from a huge car company. They all work for the company and then they come to practice right afterwards. None of our Japanese players are technically like pro players where they're only playing basketball and getting paid. And our coach actually works for the company too. And he's like pretty high up in HR. So I'm sure he deals with English customers quite often because there are some company locations in like the Texas area, California, Washington, stuff like that.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about your role. Obviously, last year at Newcastle, you know, you played inside, outside. And I even saw a clip on social media a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a month ago, one of your highlights there in Japan with you pushing the ball in transition. What type of role do you envision yourself having for this squad this year?
Same thing, you know, just be who I am, play my game. And, you know, take what's given to me. You know, if the floor is open after a rebound, push the ball, look ahead, stuff like that. You know, obviously posting up on the block, mid-range jump shots, setting good screens, rolling to the rim, rebounding, stuff like that. Anything to do to make the team win. The goal here is to move up. So this is one of those leagues where, you know, you win the league, you get to move up to the next, you know, the league. So that's their goal. That's my goal. And hopefully we can accomplish that.
I love it. Before we kind of move on and start focusing on the BBL, watch, it's fresh in my mind as well. As a Plymouth guy, make sure that when you play Mike Ojo, you go over there and give him some dap from me and tell him I said hello. Like I miss that guy. And I wish we could see him some more in this league. But there's a few things I want to dive into during your time in the BBL. And so first of all, you know, how did you end up in Cheshire, and how did you find those two seasons?
So I ended up in Cheshire my first year just based off of the agent I hired right out of college, and it was a pretty early signing, early June if I can recall correctly. You know, he's like, hey man, we got this offer, decent start, you know, a good opportunity to move up. And it, as young and kind of naive as I was, I kind of just jumped on it right away. I was like, yeah, I got that over with. Got to Cheshire, obviously had a good year that first year, won the cup, had a good year numbers-wise. Left, tried to go do my thing in a different country, didn't work out. Ended up going back to Cheshire. And it was there that second year that I kind of like told myself, like, I need to improve myself, you know, body wise, not just for basketball, but for life in general. And, that's kind of what started the weight loss thing and stuff like that. But Cheshire, you know, it's a nice place to play. The fans are real, you know, committed and dedicated to the team. The guys are great. Some of the guys are still there, Dizzy, Jalen. You know, I kind of keep in tune with them and watch some of their games, check the scores, stuff like that. Same with Newcastle. But, yeah, Cheshire, you know, gave me the start. So, you know, kind of the roots of my career.
Yeah. Am I right in saying that your first year was Coach Thomas's first year? Was that right? Was that his first year coaching? Because he went and got a trophy right off the bat, right?
Yeah, so it was his first official year coaching. Apparently, the year prior, he had like kind of taken over halfway through the year.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So that was his first year.
How did you find working under a rookie coach then? You know, like, because I really like Coach Thomas. I especially like the way he recruits. You know, he loves a big man. You know, don't get jealous now. They brought in Jimbo Lull as well, so he likes to go and find a big man over there. He must have a few scouts out and about. But how was he as a coach those first two seasons? Because he seemed, especially this season, where I'm more in tune with what's going on with Cheshire. He seems just really honest, really, you know, really straight, really black and white. Doesn't kind of mince his words.
So yeah, that first year with Ben, he was, you know, young, 26, 27 years old. And that roster that we had was compromised of some older vet guys like Orlin Jackman and Devin Bailey and Raheem May Thompson, guys that had been in the league. And I think Ben was trying to be tough and put his foot down to an extent, but I think Orlin kind of stepped up and helped him become a coach. You know, Orlin gave him a lot of insight. Whether it was good or bad, you know, that you'd be the judge of that. But we ended up winning the cup that year right off the bat. So as a rookie coach, you know, you can't complain. Unfortunately, we didn't go on to not make the playoffs that year, which was kind of a disappointment for a team that won some silverware. But he's progressed every year. Like you said, he recruits well. Obviously, last year they had Parker Jackson Cartwright. He's had the ability to retain guys year in and year out. Obviously, Jalen Hayes is there for his, third year? Dizzy's there for his third year. And guys like him. He's relatable. He's friendly off the court. You know, once you leave the gym, he is a good friend, like somebody that you can talk to if you have a problem back home or something like that. So he's a nice guy. Still got a lot of learning to do, but definitely heading in the right direction.
You stole the cup, ironically, as Orlin Jackman stole the inbound from Fab Flournoy with 5 seconds on the clock to win it at the buzzer. But you touched on it a little bit, the inspiration behind the weight loss. And, you know, you and I talked about it a lot last year, and I used to joke around with you, try to hold you accountable. But just for our listeners out there, just talk to them about, you know, it is 2021, and, you know, this is the time where people, you know, try to start afresh and take care of their bodies. So for anyone out there that's maybe looking for a transformation themselves, just kind of talk about what you did in particular to drop that weight.
So the first thing I did was I just tried to cut out as many sweets as I could. I gave up soda. So, you know, stopped drinking Coke, Pepsi, stuff like that. Really increased my water intake. It's really incredible how much just drinking more water every day can do for you. I saw it firsthand. You know, it may feel uncomfortable to, you know, you may feel bloated all the time, but it helps push all that stuff out of your body, you know, what you're eating, you know, the bad stuff, salt, stuff like that. And then secondly, I just got in the gym. I really just became like a gym rat, and not necessarily the basketball court gym, but like going to do weight training and, you know, cardio, getting on the treadmill, riding the bike, But it really just takes baby steps at first, because it can be really discouraging. It might be tough, but, you know, you got to push through those barriers and just keep going. And once you start seeing results, you kind of just fall in love with it. And, like, you know, I started seeing the weight fall off, and I just fell in love with the process, really. I say it all the time. Like, I tell my girl back home, like, you know, it was a process, but I fall in love with the process, you know. And I can't preach enough that it's not going to happen overnight. It's, you know, got to be a dedication, a commitment day in and day out. And obviously you're going to have your days where you want to have a cheat meal, stuff like that. And that's okay. But in my mind, if I have a cheat meal, you know, I know the next day I got to, you know, work a little bit harder to work it off. But it's definitely been super rewarding. I've seen, you know, the great blessings that have came from it. I move a little bit quicker, jump a little higher, can play more minutes. And I just feel better about life in general, like happier. So it's definitely been, you know, one of the greatest things I've done, in terms of, you know, living a happier, healthier life.
Does the style of the way basketball has kind of transitioned to, you know, bigs needing to be a little bit more mobile, needing to be able to stretch the floor, did that go a little bit into the inspiration of you needing to change your body and change your style of play for the longevity of your career?
Maybe just a little bit, but as you saw that first year in Cheshire, I was heavy. But, you know, the numbers were there, you know, so it wasn't necessarily for that aspect. It was, you know, lose weight now and be able to play for an extra 5 to 10 years, or play heavy for 5 years and be done. Because, you know, with all that weight sitting on me, my knees were bound to, you know, go, you know, my joints would hurt, stuff like that. So the longevity of my career has been, you know, probably increased because of the weight loss. And I think that's, you know, the biggest thing. But yeah, I mean, it's helped. I can guard, you know, faster guys now than I could have, you know, that first year. But, you know, like I said, it's a process, man. I still take care of it every day. I was at the gym earlier today. I'm actually probably going to go again after this to do a little bit of cardio, as I see your little girl behind you.
Yeah, she's sneaking in right now. Hey! I tried to keep her away, but she can't resist.
One of the things I want to ask you is, what was the kind of confidence you got? Because like you said, you saw the numbers in those first two seasons. You saw the numbers. Did that give you the confidence to say, hey, I could have a 10-year career? So going into it, were you kind of just, hey, I'm playing pro, and then that mindset switched to, hang on a minute, I could play here for a really, really long time?
Yeah, actually, that's pretty accurate. That first year, I was kind of careless. I was just happy to be somewhere playing, but I wasn't thinking about the future necessarily. Like, you know, I was living in the moment day by day. But once I made that commitment to lose weight, you know, I started thinking going forward, like, you know, like, I'm going to try to make the most of this. Like, I'm not just going to settle and, you know, play 2 years and then call it quits. You know, I've made this a job, like a real job, not just, you know, a 2 year post-college graduation vacation. But in my mind, I'm still saying I probably want to be done within the next 3-4 years, just because the average career of a big man isn't very long, in my opinion, anyways. But I want to be able to, you know, walk by the time I'm 40 years old. If I play too long, I might be wheelchair bound or something like that. So, you know, just trying to play, have fun with it. Once I kind of see myself on a bit of a decline, you know, might be time to wrap it up.
And stuff. Okay, so let's move to your time in Newcastle, because this is a different mindset now. You know, no disrespect to Cheshire, but this is a winning team, a culturally winning team over a long period of time. Feel free to add in any funny stories about Mr. Lasker. I love those, and they always make the outtakes, which is great. But what was that transition like for you? And then what was the differences between the two teams?
Well, to be honest with you, that third season that I signed in Newcastle, I kind of like told myself I had a point to prove. And what I mean by that is, after 2 successful years in Cheshire, I had no other teams from the BBL reach out and ask if I was available or had any interest coming to play for them. And Newcastle was probably one of them, to be honest with you. So I felt a bit disrespected by that. And I ended up trying to go to the G League, made a training camp roster. Unfortunately, it's very political. Things didn't work out, you know, so be it. Then I got in touch with Fletch, and me and Fletch had talked about playing together when we faced each other when I was at Cheshire. And I was like, let's make it happen. And within probably 2 weeks, the deal was done. And I came to Newcastle with, you know, a point to prove that, you know, why are these other teams not asking me if I'm available? So I kind of wanted to, you know, inflict, you know, some kind of, I don't know what you want to call it, but I went to Newcastle, had a good year. I honestly think we were really climbing the ladder right there at the end before things got cut off. And I'm curious to see what would happen, you know, come playoff time, stuff like that. But, you know, the world may never know. But in terms of stories, man, I got tons of stories. That group was, you know, a crazy group. You know, one of my favorite guys to just mess with and be around was Sade.
Yeah.
dude was just funny, you know, without even trying to be funny. But, you know, Drew was often late to practice. You know, he kind of ran the show a little bit. Oh, I'm late.
Hey,
you know,
hey, hey. No responsibilities, man. It was by default.
Drew's like the grandfather of the team, always worried about taking care of everybody else and, you know, kind of comes and goes as he pleases. And from what I recall, he was always over there getting a massage during practice. You know, Katie, I don't know if Katie's there, but Drew was often on the massage table.
This is not the picture that he paints, you know, on the social media. You know, this guy is like, you know, work harder, but you're telling me that he's getting a lot of massages.
Hey, CJ mentioned earlier about wanting to walk when you're 40, and I'm close to 40, and I want to be able to walk and run with my kids. So you got to make sure that you flush all them toxins out, right? You talked about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. I feel you, man. When you in terms of looking at your kind of fitness journey and stuff like that, did you make the mistake? Because I made the mistake when he was down in Plymouth of trying to pick his brain once, and he just loved it. I mean, I don't know if he still does it now, but he used to carry around this bag. He had this little bag of goodies in there. And I remember I asked him a question one time. He sat down, he crossed his legs over, gets his notebook out. I mean, Drew lives for this kind of stuff. Did you pick his brain at all?
No, he actually, like Drew said earlier, he kind of just, you know, would give me, you know, some fits every now and then about the whole thing, kind of joke with me. He'd be like, oh, you going on your treadmill today? Did you run up here to practice today?
I'd be like, hey, it's 7 o'clock. You know, you can't eat for the rest of the day.
Yeah. So Drew was always, you know, making sure I was sticking with it. And I like that. But, you know, Drew works hard. You know, I remember last year, Drew had one of the best games that I'd seen him play at Manchester. And, of course, toward the end of the game, he gets hurt, and Drew's out for about 6 months after that.
See, that's what he gets.
Man had a double-double, and he said, I'm going to take the rest of the season off.
It took it out. It took everything out of me, literally.
I love it. Hey, one of the things I really want to focus on is this build up to the cup final. You know, I really think this is probably something that's a podcast for itself under all the kind of duress that you guys were under. But just kind of surmise a little bit what you guys were going through behind the scenes, you know, because obviously to set the scene, this is when the pandemic starts to really kind of take a hold worldwide. Nobody knew what the implications are. You know, import players were keen to get home because they didn't understand, you know, the nature of what was going on and whether there was advice going out there that you might even get stuck in a particular country. So a set amount of guys make a decision to leave. A set amount of guys make the decision to stay, which is you two. Why did you stay? And what was that build-up like? You know, because you almost, it seemed to me on the outside that you almost became underdogs all of a sudden for some reason, even though you still retained a huge amount of talent. People just thought that adversity was going to kill you.
Right. So first of all, I decided to stay because I think I owed that to the club. Paul, Fletch, Darius, Drew, guys like that. for giving me the opportunity. But second of all, like I said at the beginning, I had a point to prove that season. I just had that, you know, that mentality that, you know, I was out to make a statement, and I think I did that. But yeah, behind the scenes, as I'm sure Drew can recall, we had a couple of team meetings like that week leading up. We were unsure if the game was even going to happen. Guys were, like you said, worried about getting stuck in the country and not being able to go home for an extended period of time. And Paul was very helpful in terms of like making sure that guys were comfortable. He gave us options. And obviously, a couple of guys took the option to leave. And, you know, I was like, hey, I'm going to stay, stick it out, try to win. But, you know, obviously I had, you know, some conditions. I left right after the game. The next morning I was on a flight home. So it was really a way to go out in terms of winning. And I was home the next day. But like I said, I'm curious to see what would have happened, you know, going forward, because I think we were clicking as a team. And to have, what did we have, 6, 7 guys, Drew?
Yeah, literally. And on top of that, remember, as you said, I was out 6 months. You was out 5 months with the same ankle injury. So that was both of our first game back in like literally over a month.
Yeah. So I was out for about since like around Valentine's Day, I believe.
Yeah.
And so about a month. And yeah, it was crazy, man. We were winded. It was all crazy.
And just to clarify, because obviously Mike Morcell was one of the guys who decided to leave, and he's just signed for Plymouth. And I know sometimes I see on social media there's some mixed emotions behind who stayed, who left. You know, that was a personal decision. So to any listeners out there, I wouldn't judge Mike any differently than I would judge myself or CJ. You know, we decided to stay for our own personal reasons, and Sade and Mike, they decided to leave. It was no ill will there. It was just everyone had to make the best decision for themselves. So I just want to clear that up, because I know there's a lot of fans out there that feel some type of way about the guys that left, but you know, they had to do what was best for them and their families. And the guys who stayed, we didn't feel any type of way about it. We just said, okay, this is who's here. And we felt like we had enough to win. I know me personally, I felt kind of disrespected that we all of a sudden became underdogs. Cause I was even though we're undermanned, like, we got 6 professionals, so like that should be enough to get it done. So
that Sholin team, you know, I'd still love for them to make that leap to come into the BBL. I mean, they were really, really good. But like you said, the talent that you retained, I think one of the things that I found interesting through this, you know, this worldwide pandemic is just how we do sometimes decompartmentalize the fact that it's a pandemic. You know, like, it's so interesting to me that fans would actually be mad at people especially during that time of, even now, we're still a little bit confused about what the rules, what should we be doing. At that time, we didn't know, you know, how that was going to be affecting us and our immediate family. So, you know, I don't think anyone out there should be, you know, trying to play a blame game. I don't think those people that stayed, you guys did an amazing job from a basketball standpoint, but it wasn't like the guys were the heroes and they were the zeros. There was a no-win situation in that. And I just think that's where it is. Do you think, though, with those guys, I don't know if you stay in contact with the majority of those guys that made that decision, do you think that those guys would have any kind of regret? You know, because CJ just stuck around one day longer, you know, and he's the guy with the trophy, you know. Do you think there's a little bit of regret there?
You know, there might be. But maybe not. You know, like Drew said, it was a personal choice. You know, you had to make the decision that, you know, you felt like was best for you. And obviously those guys felt like it was best for them to go home. I was lucky enough to stay and win. Now, if we would have lost, I might be saying other things. So, yeah. You know, that goes without saying that it could go either way. But I'm so happy I did it, man. I think, you know, on top of that, it's a game at the end of the day. Yeah, we're professionals, but it's just a game. You're just here to have fun. And, you know, we did it for the fans. And it's kind of weird thinking about it back then, because I remember during, like, the ceremony for the trophies and stuff like that, it was, like, all elbow touches. There were no handshakes or nothing like that. High fives. It was, like, everybody wanted to touch elbows. And 6 feet social distancing wasn't a thing yet. But it was a good time. I'm really glad I did it, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah, I think for me, that's won a lot. You know, that feeling, those emotions will stick with me forever because, like you talked about, Jay, the buildup, the whole storyline was just amazing. The way the game unfolded going into overtime, it was just something that, you know, I would never forget. But let's switch gears a little bit, CJ, and anyone who follows you on social media and follows you on Instagram in particular, at least once a week, they'll see a post that says, "Got those." And for anyone out there that doesn't know what I mean, that means that he's just purchased another pair of shoes. That's for someone who can afford to buy shoes regularly because they don't have kids. But so
that's so true.
So obviously you're a sneakerhead. So just talk to us a little bit about your collection. What's the inspiration behind the collection? What you got in there in the vault? Just share a little bit of insight with us.
Yeah, man, obviously I love my shoes. It's kind of been crazy over this whole pandemic thing. So when I actually went home, I ended up moving from Ohio to North Carolina. And kind of during this whole pandemic / moving, I actually got rid of a lot of stuff that I had. I sold a lot, but, you know, the buying never stops. And my girl, she'll tell you any day of the week that she gets packages to the door almost every day, even when I'm over here. She's got like a sneaker collection of mine in her bedroom that takes up like, you know, one whole corner of her room. But she's a good sport about it. But yeah, you know, I love my Jordans, my Jordan 1s, my 11s. You know, Jordan's obviously the greatest to ever do it. You know, the best sneaker line out there. And they're not just basketball shoes, they're casual shoes. You know, you can throw on a pair of Jordan 1s with a pair of jeans and go to the club. Yeah. You and me don't do that anymore, Drew, but, you know, the young guys, that's what they like. But I've been into Kobe's recently. You know, I was into Kobe's before, but not as much as I am now. But ever since the tragic passing, you know, they've been a hot commodity and they're harder and harder to get. So I've kind of been soaking all those up as much as I can and retaining those. But, yeah, like Drew said, you know, if I get something new, you know, it's going up on Instagram. I got to let people know what I got. And I actually have a little story archive on my page. If you click on that, you can kind of run through and see a couple of the things I have. But, you know, Nike's been playing with me a little bit recently. I haven't been able to get some of the shoes that I've wanted, and it's kind of had me a little frustrated. So, Drew, you know, talk to your connect over there in England. Let me know what they're saying about that.
But, I see what I can do for you. But we are having a Final Four edition. We got four players, and we're competing like Final Four style, top three shoes against one another. Well, we're going to get the fans involved. So listeners, look out for that on social media very soon. But if you were involved in that, give us your number one go-to shoe.
Oh, man, that's tough. I've had a pair of Eminem Encore 4s. So those are a pretty highly touted shoe. But personally, the shoe that I got to go with right now, just released, was the Grinch Kobe 6. Apple joint. Mm. They re-released it. I don't think a lot of people were expecting it, but luckily I was able to get my hand on a pair of those. And that's probably one of my favorite shoes right now. You know, I want to wear it to play in, but shipping things over here is a bit pricey. So, you know, I might have to wait for, you know, next season. Who knows where that'll be.
I think that's a great pick right there. I think for me, I think the best – I wasn't the biggest sneakerhead, but I think the best shoes I ever had was in college, having the Jordan 11 Lows, the white with the white snakeskin. That was as jazzy as I got, I think, back in the day. But I just felt like – I felt like $1 million when I was playing. But we shall see what these sneakerheads be bringing to the table – see whether they can compete with yourself. I'm sure we'll throw you into the equation somewhere just to see what they do. Look, CJ, sadly, we're out of time. You know, I think there's a number of avenues we could have gone down there and just made a pod just all of its own. It's been great to touch base with you. I'm sure fans will love to hear your name again. Good luck for the rest of the season, brother, and hopefully we get to chat to you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It was fun.
Appreciate you coming on, brother. Keep doing your thing, my man.
So I hope you, the listeners, enjoyed that one. Thanks, CJ, so much for giving your time. Let us know what you think about the big man. Even though he's not around anymore, we miss him in this league. Okay, player of the week nomination. Remember the first rule of POW, guys, is you have to get a win. Okay.
I get it.
Chris Tawia on London Lions, 22 points, 10 rebounds, 30 index. Breon Brady, Manchester Giants, 18 points, 17 rebounds, 4 assists for a 31 index. And then Jordan Williams of the Worcester Wolves, 18 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists on a 24 index. Guys, you know what to do. Get your votes in and let's see who the new player of the week will be. Okay, a quick whistle stop through the BBL trophy drawn by the GOAT himself, Daniel Routledge. Please don't forget to catch him and our Northern Hoops genius, Dave Forrester, on the Sunday breakdown. Little shout out there for you, Dan. The draw brought a couple of big ties. Let's start. London versus Leicester. Ooh. Newcastle versus Bristol. Cheshire versus Hemel. Glasgow versus Reading. Worcester versus Manchester. Sheffield versus Plymouth. Surrey versus Thames Valley. And Derby versus Solent. Looking forward to a few of those matchups. I think London versus Leicester is the one that jumps off the page. And there are a couple of big boys coupled in together. So could we be seeing a few new names in the latter stages?
But you know what that means, Jay? It puts more pressure on Newcastle, London, and Leicester to grab that cup final, because that trophy is going to be tough.
Yeah, I think whoever wins that trophy is going to have earned it, I think, especially if it comes from that part of the draw. So really interested to see how that plays out, and just praying that we can keep this dreaded COVID away from that situation, especially for the NBL teams who come into this competition. This is such an exciting moment for those guys. There's so much exciting talent this year in that Division One, and I want to see them, and I want to see them show out. So, it's exciting times. Okay, last, but by no means least, fans' feedback. This one was from Chris Plant. I thought it was so good. We chuck it into the show right here. And it was, how can teams like Surrey, Glasgow, Worcester, etc., bridge the gap between themselves and teams like London, Newcastle, and Leicester? Given the latter has superior budgets and fan bases, can it be done at all? And also, Matt Wake added to this asking how Solent would fare against those three teams. So let's cover that right at the end. So this could obviously be a pod all of its own. So we need to condense this just a little bit. Maybe become a little fantasy GM. Myself and Drew have gone in two different directions. So I'll jump in and start answering from my perspective. So what I was thinking of when they asked that question is, I wanted to pick out one particular franchise I think has the most potential to be that consistent threat to the top three. Now with Plymouth, their investment, you might put them as the fourth. But if I was looking for a franchise, I'm going with the Glasgow Rocks. You have a country of opportunities, okay? There's no other franchises around you guys. There's a lot that can be done there to try and bring it all together. You have the facilities, fantastic place to go and play. Perhaps not to travel to, but fantastic place to go and play. Early signs point towards having the right coach. So Coach Murray looking good so far. But the bad news is, for you, Chris, is I think that they may have missed a really pivotal window. Okay, the pandemic robbed them of a chance at a league title. It might feel like it was their league title, but I think it gave them a chance at the league title. And a huge piece of that puzzle retires in Kieran Achara. Another star in Fraser ends up at the Leicester Riders. So they are in a rebuild at the moment. But the potential has always been there. And personally, I want as many of those Commonwealth Games players as I can get back. I'm wooing Fraser back. I'm trying to get Mike Vigor. I'm trying to get Carl Jimenez, who's got a real talent down in Leicester Riders. I'm checking in with Kieran. I'm making sure he is sure on that retirement. And Skylar White, I believe, down at Surrey, has a Scottish passport. I want a core, a committed. I want to be committed to that core. Local heroes, local stories, building my community engagement around this. And look, they've done this before, and I think that they were really onto something, and it just didn't stick for whatever reason. Looking at the teams you mentioned, Chris, talking about Leicester, Newcastle, London, these are teams that win on and off the court. So they're looking after players, they're looking after staff, they're reaching out to the community, their marketing and comms are next level, which is huge in this day and age. And one thing that people don't take into consideration is it's a recruitment tool as well to be seen. For me, the Rocks are a sleeping giant that is threatened on and off to compete. And I like what they're doing this season, but legitimately, how many of those players will be there next season? I'm assuming most of those guys are trying to shine for bigger pastures. And that's why I'm trying to reach out to a Scottish base of players and trying to do a Jamie Edwards right here. I'm trying to do a Jamie Edwards, Manchester Giants. I'm trying to sell this long-term plan of sticking around, because change, you don't want a huge amount of change and you don't want to be starting again. Eagles and Riders especially, they're never starting again. They have a culture base of players that can integrate others and get ready to go trophy hunting. Drew.
Interesting take, Jay. Chris, I'm going to take a different approach to this question. Firstly, let's push money to the side, okay? So, and firstly, don't assume that the Lions, Eagles, and Riders are the top three clubs when it comes to budget, because you'd be surprised that that's not quite the case. And if we can just look at a couple of things, and from a player perspective, if I put myself back in those shoes in 2005, as I'm trying to find a club, searching for a club, there's a couple of things that I'm looking for. Again, I'm putting money to the side because we're looking at things all equal. For me, it's about building an attractive foundation. And there's three things that players care about when they're going back and forth to their agent. And this is, by the way, if you have options, obviously. If you don't have any options, you're just going to take what you can get. Okay, so what players are looking for is recent success of a team, okay? No, players don't care about a team winning in the early 80s or 90s, okay? So it's about the recent success. The next thing is they're looking for the professionalism, all right? That matters tremendously because you got guys traveling across the world to play basketball. And then lastly, location, okay? So location does play a role. Guys care what city they're in and, you know, you want things to do off the court, so that plays a role. So I don't mention individual roles because those are conversations that the coach is having with the agent or the player. But at this point in a player's career, you're taking that with a grain of salt. And the reason why I say that is because us players learn through our college recruitment that coaches are usually full of S-H-I-T when it comes to that. They're going to do what they need to do, tell you what you want to hear to get you in the door. So you're not going to take that with a Bible. If a pro coach says, yeah, we're going to feature you in the offense, you're going to get 15 shots a game. So, you know, we disregard that. That isn't always the case. And so we focus on things that are more concrete, like the three things that I mentioned. So let's think about the other teams in the league. Okay, so let's look at the first thing that I mentioned, the location. All right, so if we look at London, before they got the money from 777, they were able to draw in guys like Justin Robinson and draw in other talent because they're located in London. Okay, that's an easy sell for Brits because most of the talented Brits are from London, and it's a great sell for Americans because obviously you're saying you get to live in the capital. Outside of London, what's another attractive city in the UK? In the BBL, sorry. Probably only Manchester, right? I mean, there's not another city that you can say, no offense to Cheshire, but an American is not really keen on living in Cheshire. Okay, so now let's look at the recent consistent success. Like I mentioned, not the 80s and 90s. Outside of Leicester and Newcastle, There's only one team that comes to my mind that's had recent success, and that's the Sheffield Sharks. You could throw Worcester Wolves in there, as they had, I think, maybe two or three championships in the last 10 years, and they've been in a couple of finals, but the Sheffield Sharks have won four titles within the last 10 years. Other than that, there's no one, because Leicester, Lions, and Newcastle have pretty much dominated the trophies over the years. And then the last thing that we look at is the professionalism. And when we talk about what is professionalism for our listeners out there, what's important to me as a player? Okay, firstly, it's the housing. What's my living situation going to be like? Am I going to be able to have my own apartment, or am I going to be in a house with five or six guys? The next thing is, what's the car situation? Okay. And then last but not least, what's the travel situation traveling to these away games? Are we traveling on a nice, comfortable coach, or are we traveling on a minibus? So these are the things that you have to think about, and you put them all in this pie. And how many teams can offer that in the BBL? I mean, I won't mention any names, but I mean, you know that Newcastle can offer all three. You know that Leicester can offer all three. And I'm pretty sure there's some other teams. I know that Plymouth can offer the good housing situation, the cars, and they travel pretty nicely. But you can't say that for every team in the BBL. So, you know, that's what I kind of look at when I focus on this question, Chris. I don't necessarily just focus on the money aspect, because that's not true. Those three teams aren't out in front when it comes to budget. So overall, to answer your question, you have to play the long game. And if I'm confident in any team in the BBL, it's the Manchester Giants, because when Jamie Edwards was on here, when I talked to him in person, he's talking about the foundation. And that's what you have to be focused on if you're trying to build a team that's going to stay for years to come.
Yeah, for sure. I think Jamie Edwards is really, really impressive. And, you know, I think I said foundation. I think that's what I was aiming at when I was talking about the Scottish players. And one thing I will pick you up on is not to question too many American players' IQs, but I think probably London's attractive because that's all they know. You know, so true. When I was playing over there, or if I've got ex-teammates and stuff, whenever I speak to them, if they visit London, they don't understand that I live 4 hours away. They think that I live, like, you know, 5 minutes away, because they think London is the UK.
That's exactly true. I mean, it was for me, I thought that England was London. And I mean, I've never heard of Sheffield, Plymouth, Cheshire. I mean, now in today's day, some of these Americans have probably heard of these, a few of these cities, and that's only because of FIFA. If they don't play FIFA, they haven't heard of any of these other places. So,
yeah. Advantage Lions and Advantage Lions. Okay, that is a wrap, everyone. We hope you enjoyed this jam-packed episode. 18 down, Mr. Lasker. Lead us out.
Guys, look forward to next week's episode as we prepare for the Cup Finals. We will hear from players on each side, coaches, analysts, play-by-play, commentators. So we plan to make this episode a lot of fun. Until then, guys, keep doing what you're doing. Keep following those social media channels. Keep following us on Twitter, Instagram, and we're about to open up a Facebook as well. Keep engaging. We love the questions. We love all the interactions. And we will see you guys off until next time. The show.
The show, baby.
Thanks for listening to the BBO Show. The BBO Show is a 21 Media original podcast produced by Corey Mallory with your host, Jay Marriott and Drew Lasker. Keep up to date with the show by following the BBO on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, where you can find details on future episodes, events, and fan interaction. Until next time.